Yemeni army says it has launched a successful drone attack on Saudi Arabia, targeting a military site in the kingdom's Abha airport. UN human rights experts calling for the immediate release of the daughter of Dubai's ruler, who was allegedly taken hostage on her father's order. And Chad's army dissolves the government and parliament after announcing the death of longtime President Idriss Déby Itno. It's good to have you with us. Now, starting off with Yemen, the Yemeni army has launched a new attack on Saudi Arabia, and that's in retaliation for the kingdom's war on the impoverished country. Army spokesman Yahya Zaria says that the Air Force carried out a drone attack on the Abha International Airport. A major military site was targeted there, and the hit was accurate. Saudi Arabia said that it intercepted an explosive drone fired at a city near the airport. The kingdom and its allies launched a war on Yemen 6 years ago. Tens of thousands of people, mostly civilians, have been killed. Yemen saying its retaliatory attacks will continue until Saudi Arabia stops the aggression. Political commentator Hussein Al-Bukhati says that the Yemenis repeatedly target the Saudi Abha airport because it's a major base from which the kingdom launches attacks against Yemen.
The attack that was conducted today on Abha airport, this is because Saudi Arabia has used some part of that airport as military site, especially after about 4 years of Yemeni attacks against Saudi airbase in Khamis Mashid. Saudi has were forced to move some of their operation room and some of their military site in Khamis Mashid into Abha airport because they always cry out loud in the international media that this airport is a civilian airport and that the Ansarullah in Sana'a is targeting it, but they totally ignore that Abha has become one of the major airports used by Saudi forces to target Yemen.
UN human rights experts have called for the immediate release of Sheikha Latifa, the daughter of Dubai's ruler, who was allegedly taken hostage on her father's order. In a joint statement, experts said that the Emirati authorities have failed to provide any concrete information about Latifa, and that's despite an official request from the UN Human Rights Office. The statement also calls for an independent verification of her whereabouts and assurances of her safety without any delay. In a video message released in mid-February, the princess said that she was being held hostage in fear for her life. Latifa tried to escape the country in 2018, but she was captured and returned to the UAE. Now, in other news, Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear deal have begun a new round of negotiations aimed at reviving the agreement. The meeting of the Joint Commission of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action is being held in Vienna. It's attended by representatives from China, France, Germany, Russia, the UK, and, of course, Iran. According to the EU, participants will take stock of the progress in the ongoing discussions on the prospect of a possible return of the U.S. to the deal and on how to ensure its full and effective implementation by all sides. The former U.S. administration unilaterally left the accord in 2018, and Iran began scaling back its commitments a year later in response to the U.S. sanctions. Now, Tehran saying it will reverse its commitment cuts only after it verifies the removal of the entire U.S. sanctions. Now, for the latest from Vienna, let's bring in our correspondent, Homa Lesgi. She's been watching those closely for us. Homa, good to have you with us. So what's going on? What's the latest about these talks? Last time we talked, they were trying to work on some kind of draft and list all those sanctions that Iran wants the U.S. To lift at a go.
Yes, that's right. So right now, the Joint Commission session in Vienna is over. The sides are going to go back to their capitals and come back next week for the rest of these negotiations. I was just reading a tweet by Enrica Mora, the EU representative in the talks, who acts as coordinator in the 4+1 meetings, and he has tweeted that progress has been made, although much more work still needs to be done. And he said a third working group has also been established on sequencing. We know that there were two working groups already, one working on the measures that need to be taken by Iran to come back to full compliance. And the other, which is the more important one, is the one working on the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be lifted before the U.S. can come back to full compliance and Iran can take the remedial measures. So from this stage on, it looks like the third working group will be working on sequencing. I talked earlier with the Iranian representative, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi. We can take a listen now to what he said about what this issue of sequencing means and what Iran's position actually is. Mr. Araghchi, thank you very much for your time. I'll start quickly to the cut to the chase here. So have there been any discussions in these rounds of talks about the way to remove sanctions? Does Iran want the removal of these sanctions, or is Iran also agreeing to the suspension or the seizing of sanctions, or even agreeing to waivers on these sanctions? Is that something that's come up, and is that something that's been discussed?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, actually, we are today at the end of our 6 days of intensive discussions and negotiations in the framework of the Joint Commission. As you know, we had two working groups on sanctions lifting and nuclear measures to be taken by Iran and sanctions lifting measures to be taken by the United States. We had very intensive work, as I said. Many papers were produced and exchanged between delegations, and our experts tried to make all those papers, all those opinions, closer to each other. And hopefully we can produce a final document as the outcome of these negotiations, in which we can identify the measures that the U.S. should take first as to lift all of its sanctions, and then the measures which should have been taken by Iran after the verification of sanctions lifting by the U.S. The measures are now under discussions, and we have to also discuss about the sequence of the sequence of measures taken by both the U.S. and Iran. Obviously, our position is quite clear that the U.S. should lift all of the sanctions, should take all the measures that have been identified by the Joint Commission. Then we verify, and then Iran would also take its measures in order to go back to full implementation of the JCPOA. We think that now we are somehow on the right track. We are moving forward, of course, not as might be expected. We try to avoid any time-consuming, worrisome, negotiations. We are not here to waste our time. We are not here to prolong negotiations. But at the same time, we have to be very careful, and we have to work on every single word very closely, and to make everything, in right direction. We decided to resume talks next week. The most important question is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
So, when you say lifting of sanctions, what's the difference with removal and lifting? You use the word lifting. Is there a difference? What does that mean? What does Iran mean by that word?
All sanctions should be lifted. That is quite clear. And it is the provisions are already set in the JCPOA. And when the U.S. goes back to its commitments in the JCPOA, it should exactly follow those provisions. Thank you so much.
Those were the words of Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi in an interview we just had with him after the Joint Commission meeting here ended. As you heard there, We're going to have another meeting in a week's time. The sides will come back following consultations with their capitals. Also, the Chinese ambassador following these talks said the top priority still is the issue of U.S. sanctions lifting, and these, he said, include all the sanctions, primary and secondary, that are affecting third parties as well. So we'll wait for these negotiations to continue in order for a final conclusion to be reached. Can that happen anytime soon? Remains to be seen. Back to you.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Malizgar correspondent. We'll definitely come back to you when those negotiations resume and get an update. Now, the Russian defense minister has accused NATO and the U.S. of engaging in what it's calling provocative activities in the waters and airspace of the Black Sea. Sergei Shoigu also accused Kiev of trying to destabilize the situation in Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. Now, those comments were made amid escalating tensions between Moscow and the West over Ukraine recently. The U.S. and its Western allies have expressed concerns regarding Russia's military buildup along Ukraine's borders and in Crimea. They claim that Russia might be planning to invade Ukraine. The Kremlin says its troop deployment is in response to, quote, threatening military action by NATO. The developments follow an uptick in fighting between the Ukrainian army and pro-Russia forces in eastern Ukraine. Russia has expelled two Bulgarian diplomats in a tit-for-tat move, that after Sofia asked two Russian diplomats to leave over suspected espionage activity last month. The Russian Foreign Ministry said that the two Bulgarian diplomats were declared persona non grata. On March 22nd, Bulgaria took similar action against the Russian diplomats, accusing them of carrying out activities incompatible with the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. On Sunday, Moscow also expelled 20 Czech diplomats in retaliation for a slew of diplomatic expulsions by Prague. And that's amid an ongoing row between the two countries over a 2014 explosion in an eastern town in the Czech Republic. The Chinese president has called for a rejection of hegemonic power structures in global governance, and he says that the world order cannot be led by unilateralism pursued by a few countries. In our news review program, we've discussed that issue with our guest.
The Chinese president has called for a rejection of hegemonic power structures in global governance.
Global governance should be fit for a new political and economic order, follow the trend of peaceful development and win-win cooperation, and fulfill the realistic needs of dealing with global challenges. We should respect the principle of consultation, cooperation, and mutual benefit, abide by true multilateralism, and make the global governance system go forward fairly and reasonably.
President Xi said the world order cannot be led by unilateralism from some countries. He said that arrogant treatment and interference in other countries' domestic affairs will not win the hearts of the people. The Chinese president made the remarks at the annual BOA Forum for Asia. China has long called for reforms of the global governance system. It has repeatedly clashed over the issue with the West, especially the U.S. Beijing is critical of Washington over what it sees as hegemony in global trade and geopolitics, among other issues. Timothy Kurzweil, a research fellow at Chinese University of Hong Kong, joins us from Hong Kong. We also have Angela Giuliano, political analyst, joining us from Montreux. I'd like to welcome you both. Angela Giuliano, let me first start with you. A global governance system sounds like a great idea in terms of laying out its structures, something that obviously has been worked out mainly between the world powers like China, like the U.S., but has it really worked out? And the message that China is sending, is it solely the audience being the U.S. here?
I think the message that China wants to send to the Western world is that the China you have now is not the China that was humiliated during the Opium War. China has been always the representative of the global South, the part of the world that has been colonized and is still colonized. We need to keep in mind that the Middle East, Africa are still colonized. And what China wants to do is to make a UN which is more democratic, and that we are all the countries are treated in better terms.
Well, taking a look at what China has said here, Timothy Kurzweil, the way that global governance should work is that it shouldn't be led by one entity that interferes, as China has said, into other countries, domestic affairs, etc. again, I'm guessing that this is the U.S., and how would China want to enforce or for this to be abided by or to be followed when it hasn't all these years and decades?
I think an important thing to note in their analysis is that China honestly believes that we've reached a point in history where we have a multipolar world. So they're not talking about this is going to happen in the future, maybe. They're saying that right now this is a multipolar world now, and that the reality of the world is there is no single dominant power anymore. And we've probably got used to the United States being the single dominant power in the world for a long period of time, a large part of the 20th century and the early 21st century. And I think their argument is that that time has come to a close. You know, so in terms of the way that global governance can work, I think what they're envisioning is a system that, you know, is much more collaborative than what we've been used to in the last 30 years or so, where you have U.S. leadership and a cabal of allies kind of follow on behind the United States, and everybody sort of is subjected to that type of will. What they're looking for is a much more collaborative approach to global leadership on some of the big issues like the COVID-19 pandemic or climate change or things like that.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. Timothy Criswell there, research fellow, Chinese University of Hong Kong. And also Angelo Giuliano, political analyst from Montreal. And with that, we come to an end of this news review.
Welcome back. Let's move on. Chad's army has dissolved the government and parliament following the death of longtime President Idriss Deby Itno. The army plays free and democratic elections after an 18-month transition period. It had said earlier that one of Deby's sons would replace him as the head of a military council. Deby died of injuries he sustained at the front line during a fight against rebels in the country's north earlier this month. The news of his death came just the day after he was proclaimed the winner of a presidential election, which granted him another term in office. Deby ruled the country for 30 years. India has registered record new daily deaths of more than 1,700 from coronavirus, and that takes the fatalities there to 180,000. India on Tuesday posted more than 259,000 new COVID infections. The figure is down from record levels, but it marks the sixth day in a row that daily cases are above 200,000. India has the second largest case tally in the world. Infections have surged in the past few weeks, mainly because of people's reluctance to wear masks. The government has already imposed lockdowns and hotspots, including in capital New Delhi. In the capital city, hospitals are running out of beds and oxygen supplies. Iran has recorded an all-time high of more than 25,000 daily COVID cases, pushing the country's tally to 2,287,000. Health officials saying that 395 people succumbed to the disease in the past day. And that brings to over 67,500 the total fatalities in the country. Officials say that 257 cities have been designated as a red zone. That's the highest level color-coded risk scale. Iran has seen a rapid surge in infections since late March. The uptick has blamed the more contagious strains of the virus and New Year travels. Stringent measures are in place in most parts of the nation to curb the spread of the pathogen. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. produced by IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Imam Khomeini was a religious scholar and a true worshipper and servant of God. That's why he was very much careful about performing his obligatory deeds and refraining from forbidden deeds. No doubt, one of the reasons for his success and firm resolve in political and social arenas was his profound faith in God and his pure and sincere worship. Furthermore, Imam Khomeini was highly careful of fulfilling even the mustahab deeds, that is, the recommended deeds, and refraining from makruh deeds or disapproved deeds. Mustahab deeds are the deeds that are not obligatory, but if the faithful performs them, he will be rewarded by God in the hereafter, and they will help the faithful in gaining perfection and sublimity. On the other hand, makruh deeds are the ones that are not haram, forbidden or sinful. Yet, the faithful are recommended not to perform them as they are considered as the prelude for performing forbidden deeds. In this episode, we are going to touch upon Imam Khomeini's adherence to performing recommended deeds and heedfulness to refrain from disapproved ones. Stay tuned, please. As we said, Imam Khomeini used to perform recommended deeds, although they are not obligatory according to the Islamic jurisprudence. Obligatory deeds are the ones that should be done by the faithful, otherwise he or she would be punished in the hereafter. But the recommended deeds will not lead to punishment if they are not performed. For instance, daily ritual prayer is obligatory and if it is not performed willingly, the person will be punished in the hereafter. But performing the midnight prayer is a recommended deed, which has very high rewards, although if no faithful will be punished for abandoning it. Meanwhile, a makruh or disapproved deed is like performing daily ritual prayer in front of a picture. Although it is not forbidden, it is better to put the picture somewhere else or cover it with a piece of cloth before prayer. The ulama and faithful usually try to stick to recommended deeds and refrain from disapproved ones. One of the recommended deeds during performing ritual ablution is to face the Qibla, that is Kaaba in Mecca. Imam Khomeini used to observe this deed. Dr. Burjardi, the Imam's son-in-law, says Imam Khomeini would observe every detail of the ablution towards the Qibla. So, if the tap was not toward the Qibla, he would fill his hand and after closing the tap, he would pour the water on his face or arm toward the Qibla. one of the recommended deeds in daily ritual prayer is to put on perfume. In fact, this has originated from the tradition of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt. Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, has been narrated as saying that the prayer with perfume is higher in reward than the one without it. Dr. Borujerdi again says, Imam Khomeini always put on perfume for prayer. Even during his stay in Najaf, he performed his midnight prayer on the roof. He had a glass of perfume there. Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini wouldn't give up recommended deeds even in critical conditions. His daughter-in-law, Fatemeh Tabatabai, says, during the martyrdom of Haj Agha Mustafa, the Imam's elder son, we didn't see anything except the Imam's spiritual power, so that he was walking according to his regular program, and near midday, he started performing the ritual ablution while facing the Qibla. Then he combed his beard, put on perfume, and stood for prayer. Dear friends, Imam Khomeini didn't give up recommended deeds even during the time of hospitalization. It is narrated and even broadcast on TV that his younger son, Haj Ahmad, combed his beard as he was going to stand for midnight prayer. Dear friends, we said that according to the Islamic jurisprudence, it is recommended to avoid praying in front of a picture, especially the picture of a human being or an animal. Imam Khomeini was very careful about this deed. His daughter, Zahra Mustafavi, says, in our room, there was a black statue on the wall, and in the other room, there was a picture. So the Imam told me that in neither of the rooms, one can pray. Hujjatul Islam Muhammad Reza Nasiri also says, during Imam Khomeini's migration from Iraq to Kuwait, our companions left for having the passports sealed. At that time, the Imam wanted to stand for prayer. There was a picture of Saddam at the customs room. So he went out and said, let's go somewhere else for prayer. There was a newly constructed building that had been prepared for travelers to rest. We went there and performed congregational prayer behind the Imam. Dear friends, next time we will continue the discussion.
سبحان الله والحمد لله لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر لا إله إلا الله.
Let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah.
سبحان الله
Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. In this segment of the show, The Months of Allah, we're going to talk about famous reciters of the Quran in the Muslim world. One of the greatest and most famous reciters of the Holy Quran is, without a doubt, Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq Al-Minshawi. He is very famous throughout the Muslim world. Everyone knows him, just like Sheikh Abdul Basit. Why is it that he is so famous? This reciter, who was born in 1920 in the city Menshah, and he was born into a Quranic family. Everyone was a reciter in his family. His father was a very famous reciter of the Holy Quran. Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq Menshawi memorized the whole Quran when he was a child, just like most reciters in Egypt. Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq Menshawi was asked by the Egyptian radio to come to their studio and record his recitations, but he refused their offer, just like his father, Siddiq al-Menshawi. Eventually, the radio crew brought their equipment to the place where Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq al-Menshawi was reciting, and they were able to record his voice and broadcast it on the radio. His voice had something called khashya. Khashya means a voice that has fear. But what kind of fear? Not just an ordinary fear like you're scared of someone. No. The fear is out of respect. And it's like Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq al-Menshawi was reciting the Quran right in front of Allah, right in front of God. When reciting the Quran, he wants to be careful that God is pleased with him in the way that he recites the Quran. And that is why we hear a kind of fear in his voice. This is other than the huzn that many reciters have in their voice. Huzn means sorrow, because you know the Quran was revealed in sorrow and it has to be recited in sorrow, as the Prophet has said. But this is beyond sorrow. This is khashya, the highest level of huzn, which is even better than huzn. With this introduction, let's go ahead and listen to the recitation of Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq al-Menshawi, verse 45 of Surah Qaf, and verses 1 to 13 of Surah Ar-Rahman.
نحن أعلم بما يقولون وما أنت عليهم بجبار Thank you.
We are most knowing of what they say, and you are not over them a tyrant. But remind by the Quran whoever fears my threat. In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. The most merciful taught the Quran, created man, and taught him eloquence. The sun and the moon move by precise calculation, and the stars and trees prostrate. And the heaven he raised and imposed the balance, that you not transgress within the balance, and establish weight in justice, and do not make deficient the balance. And the earth he laid out for the creatures. Therein is fruit and palm trees having sheaths of dates, and grain having husks and scented plants. So which of the favors of your Lord would you deny?
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
after Florida's Senate Republicans on Thursday, April 15th, passed an undemocratic anti-protest bill, the state's ACLU chapter condemned GOP lawmakers for aiming to shut down political speech they disagree with in a direct attack on the First Amendment and at the cost of black and brown people. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kenny Stencil Ryder. This article is published under the heading Racist, Unconstitutional, and Anti-Democratic. Florida Senate passes GOP anti-protest bill. Stay tuned for the details, please. Florida Senate Republicans on Thursday, April 15th, passed an undemocratic anti-protest bill. The state's ACLU chapter condemned GOP lawmakers for aiming to shut down political speech they disagree with in a direct attack on the First Amendment and at the cost of black and brown people. House Bill 1 is racist, unconstitutional, and anti-democratic, plain and simple. Maya Kubik, executive director of the ACLU of Florida, said in a statement. Kubik said the bill, first proposed by DeSantis last September in response to nationwide protests against police violence and passed last month by Republican lawmakers in the State House, was purposely designed to embolden the disparate police treatment we have seen over and over again directed towards black and brown people who are exercising their constitutional right to protest. It is no coincidence, Kubik continued, that HB 1 and its companion bill, Senate Bill 484, were introduced by politicians who harshly criticized millions of Floridians and Americans for demanding racial justice and police accountability. This is a bill that is a disgrace to our state, he added. DeSantis described HB 1 as his legislative priority, even though, according to ACLU of Florida, 95% of the protests in Florida last year were peaceful and required no police intervention whatsoever. The bill heads to the governor's desk as people in Minnesota and Illinois take to the streets to express opposition to recent police killings of unarmed individuals of color. Characterizing the measure as an attempt to chill and criminalize people for exercising their First Amendment right to peacefully advocate for social change, the ACLU of Florida explained the full ramifications of the legislation. By redefining writing, the bill grants police officers broad discretion in deciding who could be arrested and charged with a third-degree felony at a protest and fails to provide protection for people who have not engaged in any disorderly and violent conduct. In Florida, a felony charge strips people of their voting rights. This bill would also hinder local governments from determining how to allocate law enforcement resources to address critical needs in their local communities. It allows the governor with the cabinet to usurp control of a city budget and amend it to their liking at the appeal of any country commissioner or state attorney, regardless of whether local elected officials approve of changes made in the budget. It would also shield violent counter-protesters from civil liability for killing a peaceful protester or demonstrator with their vehicle and make pulling down a Confederate flag a punishable offense for up to 15 years in prison. As March for Our Lives Florida, a student-led group fighting to end gun violence, noted in a statement, this bill emboldens and protects white supremacists who seek to injure peaceful demonstrators. threatens peaceful protesters with a felony, and penalizes local municipalities that choose to divert funds to community-based violence intervention prevention programs. Progressives have been sounding the alarm that Republican lawmakers in multiple states are exploiting the deadly attack on the halls of Congress by a mob of then-President Donald Trump's supporters to push for anti-protest bills, which critics say have nothing to do with stemming the tide of far-right extremism and everything to do with suppressing left-wing dissent and quashing protests against police brutality, fossil fuel pipelines, and more, as Common Dreams reported earlier this year. Since the right-wing insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, at least 13 states have taken up legislation to crack down on protests, NBC News reported recently. In addition to Florida, legislators in Arizona, Indiana, Maryland, Minnesota, Mississippi, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Virginia, and Washington have introduced bills that critics say use the violence at the Capitol to justify the repression of Black Lives Matter and other social justice demonstrations. In Florida, Trump ally DeSantis promoted HB1 and SB484 on January 6, the same day insurrectionists were storming the Capitol, as journalist Christopher Cook pointed out earlier this year. Journalist Ileana Hagena wrote at the time that DeSantis used the riots in Washington, D.C., attended by several new Confederates, as a pretext to make taking down Confederate status a felony in Florida. The Intercept's Aline Brown and Akilah Lacey have argued that the GOP's push for new anti-protest bills around the country reflects an attempt to rebrand earlier anti-democratic efforts to crack down on civil disobedience, taking advantage of outrage over the far-right coup attempt to undermine demonstrations for progressive causes. Florida's anti-protest bill remains highly unpopular. According to a poll conducted last month by Florida Politics, 63% of the state's voters view the legislation unfavorably. HB 1 has also provoked opposition across the U.S. Last month, in a letter addressed to State House Speaker Chris Sprouls and State Senate President Wilson Simpson, more than 100 law professors throughout the country denounced the proposal, characterizing it as unconstitutional and morally unconscionable. And yet, as March for Our Lives Florida pointed out, Republican lawmakers passed the bill anyway, and DeSantis said in a statement that he looks forward to signing it. Despite opposition from a wide coalition of survivors of police violence, religious leaders, community leaders, business owners, students, and law enforcement agencies, the legislature prioritized the passage of this bill while millions of Floridians are still waiting for a living wage, COVID relief, affordable housing, and health care, the group said. Instead of serving the people of Florida, the governor has chosen to serve Trump, the far-right wing of his party, and violent white nationalists in their efforts to silence black and brown voices calling for racial justice, the group added. March for Our Lives Florida, our members, chapters, and supporters condemned the passing of HB 1 and the failure of our lawmakers in Tallahassee to listen to the needs of their constituents. According to the Miami Herald, Senate Democrats called on major Republican political donors to pressure Governor Ron DeSantis to stop anti-mob legislation that deemed racist, unconstitutional, and partisan. in a call to grocery store chains, amusement parks, and utility companies that tend to make significant contributions to Florida Republicans, State Senator Perry Thurston said, "Don't sit on the sidelines. Do something. Take a position." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on the blessed month of Ramadan.
Ramadan is the month of opportunities. Once again, the auspicious month of Ramadan arrived with all its blessings and spiritual beauties. Before the beginning of the auspicious month of Ramadan, the Holy Prophet ﷺ used to prepare people for entering this important, lofty and blessed arena. The month of God has come to you with His blessing and mercy. According to a certain narration, the Holy Prophet ﷺ, in a sermon which was delivered on the last Friday of the month of Sha'ban, he said to the people that the month of Ramadan arrived. If we want to describe the month of Ramadan in a sentence, we should say that it is a month of opportunities. In this month, there are many opportunities ahead of you and me. If you can make use of these opportunities in the right way, a great and very valuable resources will be accessible to us.
رمضان يا شهر القرآن فيك أذوق حلاوة الإيمان لا لا تنقضي أنت للروح دواء رمضان 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 بيتك دوما قريب.
Do not forget to recite the Holy Quran, particularly during the month of Ramadan. The dear friends who have attended this meeting should not forget to recite the Holy Quran at all times, particularly during the month of Ramadan. The Holy Quran must not be eliminated from your life. Try as much as you can to make the Holy Quran part of your daily life. Recitation of the Holy Quran is beneficial only when it is accompanied by careful thinking and contemplation. A hurried and inattentive reading of the Holy Quran without gaining an appropriate understanding of the meaning is not what is meant by reciting. This is not to say that such a reading is worthless. After all, the mere awareness that one is reading God's words creates a bond with God, which is valuable, and nobody should prohibit such a reading. However, this is not the best or the recommended way to read the Holy Quran. Ramadan is the month of returning to God. We read in some verses of the dua that is particular for the days of the month of Ramadan. This is the month of fasting. This is the month of rising. This is the month of returning to God. Turn to your Lord in repentance. The Holy Quran, chapter 39, verse 54. This is the month of repentance, and this is the month of forgiveness and mercy. This month and this environment enjoy such characteristics.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.